Amish farmer Dan Alger is being prosecuted by the United States Food and Drug Administration for selling fresh, whole milk across state lines. The FDA's food police action leads us to ask, why is the government afraid of fresh, whole milk?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 727th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Lisbon who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Folks, the forces of prohibition are once more on the march, this time in rural Pennsylvania, where the Food and Drug Administration of the United States of America is prosecuting Amish farmer Dan Alger for selling fresh, whole, unpasteurized milk to his neighbors across the line in Washington, D.C. This prohibition began in earnest back in 1987 when the FDA determined, as stated on its website, that raw milk can carry harmful bacteria and other germs that can make you very sick or kill you. While it is true that unpasteurized milk may contain harmful pathogens, as may all uncooked food, we wonder at the numbers. How many people get sick and die from drinking fresh, whole, unpasteurized milk? In scanning the net, we could find no deaths documented in the published scientific literature that were attributed to drinking fresh, unprocessed whole milk that was produced on a dairy in the United States. The government's prosecution of Farmer Dan and all the other small farmers that is going on across this great land of ours leads us to ask today, how did fresh, whole, unpasteurized milk from cows become an illicit substance? Why do some consumers prefer fresh, whole, unpasteurized milk over that milk produced in giant commercial dairies? And who or what is threatened when farmers sell milk from cows to consumers? Here to help us find an answer, we have David Gumpert, the author of The Raw Milk Revolution. David, welcome to the Food Chain.
Great to be here, Michael.
Good to have you aboard. Now, listen, I have a question to ask. As a young boy being raised in Chicago, did you ever imagine that you would be helping lead a revolt in Washington, D.C. with a cow?
No, I didn't. It for any number of reasons, it was a long ways from my mind. I'm a city boy. I've always lived in big cities. I was born and raised in Chicago. I lived in New York City for a while. And then around the 1970s, I've been in the Boston area. And so always been in cities. And don't know much about agriculture, although I've learned a little bit in the last few years. Always admired people who could grow food, because that was just so far from my own experience and my own abilities. So it's
hard to imagine then, right?
Yeah, I think there was one other thing I would just say, and this is I've just kind of come to this realization. I was at this rally in Washington on Monday to support Dan Alger, and there was a cow out there, as you suggest, and the Capitol in the background. And I was a speaker there, and I was explaining to people that this is a war, that the government has declared war on people who want raw milk and want access to other nutrient-dense foods. And I kind of realized afterwards that it was just a real downer in a lot of ways, because I was raised in Chicago, but my parents were survivors of the Holocaust. And, devoted Americans through and through. I mean, my father couldn't even stand the thought of me buying a Toyota when I did, and never really forgave me, I don't think. He would never have done such a thing. Just totally committed Americans, and here I was standing outside the Capitol saying, pretty negative things about our government, and it was kind of painful.
This feeling in you, or this notion in you, came, I think, from your work in writing The Raw Milk Revolution, right?
Yes, yes.
And what do you mean by the raw milk revolution?
Well, what we are experiencing in this country is just a lot more awareness of the importance of food. Food as, in terms of simply appreciating different food, but also food as an important part of our diets, and as important in helping build our health and build our immune systems. And I think that those two factors are important trends. So there's a fast growing awareness that that's extended. That's most, I guess, most clearly symbolized in the whole growing popularity of raw milk. But there's something about milk which is important. Two things, actually. One is that milk is the first food that any of us eat or drink, usually from our mothers, and then we switch over to cow's milk. Also, from an economic point of view, milk really brings most people into the grocery store. People go shopping. They have to replenish their milk every couple weeks or so, because it doesn't keep. So when they go shopping to get an additional, gallon or 2 gallons of milk, they don't just go for the milk. They go into the grocery store and say, while I'm here, I'll buy the butter and the cheese and the yogurt and the eggs and the meat and the cleaner and this and that and the other. And before long, you've got $100 worth of groceries there, all because you went shopping for milk. And that is an important factor in the whole economic scheme of things. The retailers know it well. That's why you see milk at the very back of the store. You don't see it at the front. They want you to go buy all kinds of things before you get to the milk. And the milk producers know it well as well. So
I sense two revolutions here. I sense a revolution of people looking for good, nutritious food, but also sense that there is a rebellion against the dominant paradigm of shopping. I mean, if people are able to produce their own fresh milk from a cow, why walk all the way through the supermarket to get? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not so sure it's about as much about shopping as a growing awareness that food is very important to our health, and that so a lot of those foods you pass along the way to get to the milk refrigerator is coming into question.
Right.
The chicken. We know that chicken. 80% of our chicken is contaminated with Campylobacter.
Cook well.
I'm sorry?
Cook well.
Yeah, right. which is ironic that's allowed. The beef is full of antibiotics, and the eggs are. We had almost 3,000 people get sick last summer,
right,
from bad eggs, and not to mention the Coca-Cola and the other sugar-laden foods that are now thought to be really
dangerous
to our health.
It's kind of like walking through a landmine, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think more people are becoming aware that, hey, these other foods are really, questionable. And so when they buy from a farmer like Dan Algier, they don't just buy milk. And I think a lot of people kind of overlook that. He also sells meat. He also sells eggs and butter and yogurt, but it's chicken that's probably doesn't have Campylobacter. It's beef that from cattle that were raised on grass and have not been fed antibiotics.
But I think the most significant thing that he sells to we city people is the Amish way.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what I think of. When buying food from the Amish, you really get.
Well, the Amish way is kind of pre antibiotics and grain feeding, and so it's a traditional way. You're right.
Let me ask you a quick one before we go to a break. What about the terms here? I prefer, I don't know about the word raw milk. I think I prefer fresh, whole, unpasteurized. But then if I say fresh and whole, I'll bet those words are already owned by the conventional dairy industry.
Yeah, you're right. And I agree, raw is an unfortunate term because it connotes something, I don't know, that hasn't been treated or in a negative kind of a way. But you're right, those like fresh and whole. I'm not absolutely certain, but I think the whole milk is technically a term applied to milk that has, what is it, 3% or 4%?
Sure, so I'm sure those terms are already owned, and they're going to throw us in jail for using them.
Yeah,
right after Dan, they're going to come for us. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about the raw milk revolution with the man who wrote the book himself, David Gumpert, The Raw Milk Revolution, and you. Why is the government so afraid of fresh, whole, unpasteurized milk? Right back after these messages.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with David Gumpert, author of The Raw Milk Revolution, and we're talking about the FDA's police action in Pennsylvania prosecuting Amish farmer Dan Alger for selling raw milk to those people who actually were asking to buy that raw milk across the line there in Washington, D.C., and that is against the law. Been against the law for a while, but, I think about back to my youth and being raised on the grandparents' farm and everything, and I remember milking cows and carrying buckets of milk to the house and pouring them in the separator and taking the cream and the milk and putting them in the refrigerator and taking some to the neighbors and trading them for this and that, and how did that goodness become illegal? I guess that's what confuses me most about the subject. How did it happen that something so intrinsically honest and good, though maybe a little poopy, has become illegal? What on earth? How did this start, Dan?
Well, raw milk or fresh whole milk, as you say, has an unfortunate history in the U.S. Everyone before 1900 was drinking unpasteurized milk. Unfortunately, when the Industrial Revolution occurred in the mid-1800s, millions of people moved from the countryside into the cities, cows went with them. People didn't understand. I mean, no one understood really the importance of things like good sanitation and a healthy diet for the cows and so forth. And so the cows were brought to the city were often raised under really terrible conditions. So they were placed in the first feedlots in this country.
Right.
And
Weren't they often, David, used as kind of like urban garbage disposal units for distilleries?
Yes, and the leftover from the distilleries was often fed to the cows, so that the distilleries kind of had an additional source of income. But the cows were unhealthy, and the milk they produced was unhealthy. Not to mention, it was The people doing the milking often had contagious diseases like tuberculosis. And so what you had was a recipe for disaster, and that's what you got. You got massive outbreaks of disease, not just from milk, but from bad water and
just about
other foods that were bad. But milk, because it was being fed to children, you had a lot of the outbreaks were affecting children, and you had many thousands of children dying in outbreaks from typhoid and tuberculosis, brucellosis.
Yeah, now I spoke with a person who actually contracted brucellosis from raw milk back in the 1940s, and it was a harrowing experience for her.
Yeah.
Now, have we not taken care of that problem?
Well, it was thought that pasteurization took care of that problem, and in a sense, it did. I mean, I really don't take the attitude that this is an either-or thing. I mean, I'm not trying to discredit pasteurization, and I'm not trying to suggest that we should go back to drinking all milk unpasteurized. Far from it. All I'm asking, or all I'm advocating, is that we have a choice, and if those of us who don't want pasteurized milk want to drink it unpasteurized, we should be able to do that. But no, I don't. Pasteurization served an important purpose, I think, in terms of reducing disease at a time when we really didn't either understand or have the means to provide, like refrigeration and sanitation and those kinds of things that that were required.
And
we have those now. And the other thing that's changed is, as you just suggested, the diseases that people got, like brucellosis, are not around anymore. I mean, they've been pretty much eradicated. So when people get sick from raw milk or from any foodborne illness, and it's important to keep that in mind, people can get sick from any food. They almost always get sick today from one of four pathogens that are the same, no matter what the food is. But it's E. coli 0157H7, it's Salmonella, it's Campylobacter, and I'll think of the fourth one. But it's they're the same. And they're not, for the most part, anywhere near as dangerous as the brucellosis and the tuberculosis and the typhoid of that earlier time.
So essentially, we've kind of gotten rid of most of the big problems. Now, looking at the numbers, do we see great swaths of people getting sick from raw milk as we did with the eggs, the spinach, the peanut butter, and things like that?
I don't think we do. I mean, and I say, I have to say that because there are people who, in the Food and Drug Administration and in the Centers for Disease Control, who will dispute me, but I have yet to see them do it with anything more than kind of fear-mongering type stories where they talk about children who become very sick or and so on and so forth. But if you look at the data, tells a story pretty clearly that we don't have a very serious problem, and anything we don't have anything that can begin to be called a serious public health problem from raw milk. And just to give you a quick synopsis of the data from. Because I've looked at it from, this is CDC data I'm talking about, from 1973 through 2005, the average number of illnesses from raw milk reported to the CDC were 54 each year.
54 a year?
Yeah, 54 a year. Now, for each, that's obviously a low number, but for each illness, now this isn't just for raw milk, once again we're talking about any food. For every illness, there's some number that usually on the order of 15 to 30 unreported illnesses.
Right.
So if you take that number and just say 54 and multiply it times 20, say there are 20 unreported illnesses for each one that's reported, you may be looking at 1,000 illnesses per year. Now, that's still a very low number in the foodborne illness scheme of things because, I mean, we're talking about a situation in which the CDC says, I think it's the latest estimate is something like 46 million illnesses every year.
So out of 46 million foodborne illnesses every year, we get $1.54 from raw milk?
Well, I don't want to make that exact comparison, but let's say it's $1,000 or even $2,000. It's a tiny percentage of the overall number of foodborne illnesses.
So, yeah, not enough to really rage war over or establish a whole new prohibition over, but and yet that's what's happening, or at least it seems to me, by following this story for a number of years, it seems to be that is the case. Why did the government make it illegal to sell fresh, whole, unpasteurized milk across state lines in 1987? I mean, that's fairly
recent. That's another sad story in the whole history of raw milk. It's ironic because leading up to 1987, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, under President Reagan, was opposed to a prohibition on interstate sale of raw milk. The FDA was actually dragged, kicking and screaming, into enforcing such a prohibition by a court suit brought by a consumers group of citizens who contended that raw milk had become dangerous. Now, from all that I can tell, in kind of reconstructing what was going on then, a lot of the concern over raw milk that these the citizens group had came from California, where there was a dairy known as Altadena.
Yep.
And Altadena was really a huge dairy. I think thousands of cows, I'm going to say 8,000 cows. And they supplied most of the raw milk, not only for California, but for much of the western part of the country for many years. But there were illnesses coming out of there, and there was a huge debate over, you know, how serious the illnesses were, how many were from Altadena, how many, you know, could be blamed on raw milk.
So, Dave, we're going to have to take a quick break.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got to pick up Altadena when we get back. David Gumpert, The Raw Milk Revolution on the Food Chain with Michael Olson. Do stay tuned, right back. Okay, folks, full disclosure, I have a jug of fresh, whole, unpasteurized milk in my refrigerator, and I drink it. So much for objectivity here today. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. We're talking about raw milk, unpasteurized milk that farmers sell directly to consumers. And the government seems to be putting up a giant stink about this, and we're trying to figure out why. Part of the reason might date back to the Altadena Dairy in Los Angeles, California, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Big, giant, huge dairy that seemed to be kind of going against the grain of everything that we think of when we think of raw milk. When we think of raw milk, we think of small, grass-fed dairies, but such was not the case with Altadena, right, David Gumpert?
Right, right. Altadena believed very strongly in the benefits of raw milk and safety of raw milk, and supplied much of the western part of the U.S. with raw milk. Remember, there was no prohibition on interstate sales at that time. And a consumer group brought suit against the FDA. When the FDA wouldn't take action in instituting a ban on interstate sales, the citizens group brought suit in federal court, and a federal judge ordered the FDA to develop regulations to prohibit the interstate sale of raw milk. So the FDA did that. And so, from their point of view, they did what they were told. And now what's happened since the FDA did that is that the scientists and the regulators within the FDA have become, I guess, what you might call believers. They now think that this is an important mission that they have,
mm-hmm.
to regulate the distribution or the sale of raw milk, and they take it very seriously.
And it gives them a significant way of controlling local food.
Yes, it does. It does.
So the sad story of Altadena, I guess Altadena is still around, though, right?
Selling. I believe they're still around, but they don't sell raw milk. They haven't been selling unpasteurized milk since the late 1990s, I believe.
So
1999 or
most of the raw dairies I know are very small and kind of family centered, but they, you know, they don't seem to be able to adopt this industrial scale. Although Farmer Dan there in Pennsylvania seems to be doing pretty good. He's got, 1,000 people in his buying club?
Excuse me. Yeah, that's the buying club he was serving had I think, about 900 people. So I don't know how many cows he has exactly, but I don't think, I would venture it's fewer than 100 cows.
So let me ask the next question, of course, is why do some consumers prefer fresh, whole, unpasteurized milk over that milk produced in giant industrialized dairies? What happened to you to convince you to drink raw milk, David Gumpert, your city boy?
Right. Well, you know, I've always enjoyed milk growing up as a kid and a teenager, and kind of got away from it in my 30s and 40s just because I took to heart the advice to reduce fat consumption. And so I had gotten away from it. But when I started reading about raw milk in 2005 or thereabouts, I was curious. I actually was reading about it, and then I saw at a farmer's market in Vermont that there was some for sale. And I talked to the farmer, and I liked what she had to say, and I bought some of her milk, and I tried it, and it just tasted so wonderful. I stayed with it. But I think some people do that. They just really appreciate the taste. I've heard some people say it's like ice cream in a bottle, and it's just a very rich, creamy taste. That's kind of like if you enjoyed milk as a kid. It's just like that except better. But there are other people who say that it helps them with various chronic issues,
such as
lactose intolerance.
Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that, right?
Well, there's all kinds of debate about whether raw milk makes a difference in lactose intolerance. And there was a study done on that at Stanford about a year ago, which suggested that raw milk doesn't have any influence on lactose intolerance. But it then becomes very important how you define lactose intolerance. And they defined it very narrowly. And in fact, we're only able to find, I think, about a dozen people for the study who had lactose intolerance under their criteria. But there is a larger number of people who have trouble with pasteurized milk. And I don't know, you know, whether it's lactose intolerance or whether it's simply an allergy, they can't tolerate pasteurized dairy products, but they can tolerate raw milk or raw dairy products. So for these people, and the FDA estimates there's something on the order of 30 million to 50 million such people out there, for these people, or at least some of them, can now with raw milk enjoy dairy products. That's a big deal. I mean, because if you're limited to not being able to have any dairy products, why, you know, you can't have yogurt, you can't have ice cream, you can't have various cheeses. So it's an imposition. The other thing is there are other conditions like, say, Crohn's. People who have Crohn's sometimes say they find a tremendous amount of relief. Chronic fatigue syndrome, things like that. There was a study out of Europe of about 5,000 children, which showed that, this was just done in the last 4 or 5 years, that children who consumed raw milk had something like a 25% lower incidence of asthma and allergies than children who were drinking pasteurized milk. So you have a number of indications that, at least for some people, raw milk has some health benefits. And that's something, you know, I think that's important. I mean, I respect that. I mean, the FDA and the CDC will say, well, that hasn't been scientifically proven.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be difficult to scientifically prove in something that has such a high degree of variability as raw milk? I mean, raw milk can only have in it what the cow ate in the field.
Exactly.
It can't have anything more or anything less.
Right.
And so when you don't really know what the cow was eating, then you can't really say, you know, how do you make a judgment there?
Well, Well, in this European study, and they were feeding what they called, I think, farm fresh milk to children, and obviously it was coming from different sources, but they found this statistical fact associated with it, and so I mean they concluded that it was the milk that was the factor in reducing asthma and allergies. So but it is hard to study, certainly. I think the important point here, though, is that the government scientists, regulators, deny all this. And in fact, they say that when they will even talk about it, most of the time they won't discuss it. But those who have discussed it, they'll find fault with the European study, for instance. And they find technical things. Well, it wasn't clear that it was always raw milk that the children were drinking. The families might have boiled some of the milk, and you get into all these technicalities. But it's an unfortunate situation. I mean, I think that if people are getting health benefits from something as just a basic food like that, well, why try to deny it to them?
Well, and that's the question we want to pick up when we come back from the break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about the White Wave, fresh, whole, raw milk, unpasteurized, untouched, from cow to consumer. What's wrong with it? Do stay tuned. Right back with David Gumper. Well, I guess one of the things that's always fascinated me about the Amish is the vision of pre-industrial age purity. I mean, things might be a little dirty. There might be some fecal matter laying about the farm, but, it just seems like such a clean way of living. You don't feed the animals any antibiotics or chemicals of any kind. You feed them grass and you graze them and you're growing things organically, and it just seems to be such a wonderful, clean way of doing things. And yet, how do you get some food from those people without breaking the law? And that's what the party was all about in Washington, D.C. this week, when a bunch of people gathered on the grassy knoll there in front of the Capitol and brought a cow to Washington, D.C., and they milked it right there in front of the government, and they drank the raw milk. And David Gumpert, you were part of that. What on earth are those people thinking? Why are they so intent on getting their raw milk?
Well, there are a few things going on. I mean, one is many of them are getting health benefits from the milk. So they don't understand why the government would want to deny them access to food that's improving their health. I think there's another issue is they are getting access to other foods from Dan Algier. They're not only buying milk; they're getting the eggs and the meat and the butter and the chicken and so forth that we talked about earlier. So, if the government is successful, the government will keep Dan from being able to supply them with any of that. So they essentially, because I talked about this in my speech on in front of the cow and in front of the Capitol, that people don't want to go back to having to buy Purdue chicken. They don't want to have to go back to buying eggs from Iowa suppliers that sickened 3,000 people last summer. They don't want to go back to that choice to food that poisons them, and in their judgment, and they're not saying that no one should buy these foods, but they don't want to have these foods.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it becomes a total, or I guess what I call a food rights issue. It's not just about milk.
So as I observe the nation's food chain over the past 727 Saturdays, it seems to me as though the government's attempt to prohibit farmer-to-consumer interactions is increasing every year. And that, I guess that's why I wanted to pick up Farmer Dan's story in Washington, D.C. In your observations, does it appear that the government is intensifying its effort to prohibit farmer-to-consumer interactions and commerce?
That's a tough one. Because, you know, the USDA has a program called Know Your Food, Know Your Farmer. And, you know, I think they've been pretty sincere about that program.
What about the FDA?
Well, you know, and that's the part. I mean, the FDA is a separate agency, and I don't think the FDA has any respect for the idea of knowing your food, knowing your farmer. The FDA is inclined toward what I would call a sanitary model. They would rather just sanitize all the food, irradiate it all, or otherwise put it through processes that strip out any possibility of pathogens. And in the process, so they strip out the good bacteria and the good enzymes as well. And that's kind of their goal, their model. And so this whole, you know, buy local and raw milk and pastured chicken and
a giant pain in the butt, right?
Well, it's not only a pain in the butt, but it's a food safety threat. And so they people who buy from Farmer Dan often, you know, they don't not only want their eggs from Farmer Dan, but they don't want them washed. They don't want them refrigerated. They want them, as you suggest, they want them the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
And so that just totally runs against anything the FDA can even talk about. I mean, it just makes them apoplectic. Because they really, I think, believe very sincerely that they are doing the best for food safety. They're protecting people, whether they want to be protected or not.
What about the interests of conventional, you know, food chain, that supermarket that you talked about, where you have to walk all the way through the supermarket to get to the milk, which is way in the back? What about their interests? Don't you think they would be a little bit frightened by the prospect of people wanting to buy from Farmer Dan?
Yes, and they are frightened. There's no question about it. The conventional dairy industry is frightened about it. I mean, you can just see that from all the statements they've been making. Worrying about this. The way they express worry is they say that if raw milk gets people sick, why, that reflects badly on the entire dairy industry, which is just doesn't make any sense, because if raw milk were to get people sick, people would be more inclined to buy pasteurized milk because they'd want the safe alternative. But now what's happening here, I think, from the point of view of the FDA and big dairy and other food interests, is that this whole business of buying locally produced milk and other foods direct from farmers is getting out of hand. It's just getting away from them.
Hold that for just a minute. I'm going to have to take a quick break, but I do want to pick that up when we get back. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, right? Well, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't mind buying Farmer Dan's milk, his chickens, and whatnot. And I can see how 1,000 people in Washington, D.C. would want to buy his produce as well. I can remember, as a matter of fact, visiting Joel Salatin in the Shenandoah River Valley and watching in amazement as people drove for like 3 hours to buy his chickens. And I asked one lady, you know, did you really drive all that way to buy a chicken? And she said, these aren't chickens. These are Joel Salatin chickens. And I guess there's a little bit of that with Farmer Dan in Pennsylvania as well, and thus the threat to the conventional supermarket. When people start buying directly from farmers, then there it is a threat. So do you see the hand of big business behind this effort to restrict farmer-to-consumer sales?
Well, I see the hand of big business in the actions of the federal regulators who really have the big business interests at heart. If you look at this investigation of Dan Alger, this is the court action against him in Pennsylvania resulted from an undercover operation by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, in which it had a number of agents pose as consumers under assumed names to join this food club in Maryland and buy raw milk from Dan Alger. But they did this for over a year. They posed as members of this food club. They went
maybe they liked the milk.
Well, yeah. But I think the part that I find scary is that the food that Dan delivers is only made available privately. You have to be a member of the club, and if you're a member of the club, you pick up your food in other at the homes of other members. It's you have drop off
right.
points. It's not ever made publicly available. You don't go to the local to a local store or anything to pick it up. And so these agents were going into people's homes and picking up their milk. And I just kind of wonder what anytime government agents can wander around freely in an individual's garage or on their on their property, what else are they up to? And I just for that kind of operation to be going on for that long just says to me that this was a very, very serious matter. It had to be approved by the Justice Department.
Yep.
Justice Department eventually filed the
from the
production.
Heights of government. Well, we're out of time. David Gumpert, author of Raw Milk Revolution. Do you see any sanity coming down the line?
No, I don't, I'm afraid to say. In fact, I see a growing amount of insanity.
All right. Thank you for appearing on The Food Chain, and thank you all out there for tuning in. Remember, stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.